I self-assigned as the clapper this time around. Unless someone else wants to clap.
I think the person with the most tenure should clap.
I think that's true. That sounds good.
Where's Mikhail at? All right, ready? 1, 2, 3.
Nice. Anthony, so close. We'll count it. We'll count it. It's good enough.
That's funny. Cool. Well, welcome everybody to what is the, I guess, final episode of the DNC podcast. Not necessarily stream, but podcast. I anticipate to doing some code streams eventually. Not screams, streams.
And code screams.
Code screams. Yeah, that's part of the stream.
Yeah, if someone tells me one more time what I'm doing wrong, I'm going to freak out. But yeah, so we thought it would be fun to have Paul on the last episode as well, since he was also on the first episode. And I don't think we've done a show with all three of us at the same time either.
I've been on with Rockwell a couple times, but not both of you. Haven't been on a podcast with you in like 3.5 years or something, Sean.
Which is wild because it doesn't seem like it's been that long, I guess. It doesn't feel like it anyway. So let's try to, I'm trying to think about this. 285 episodes, and it started in like 2015, yeah?
October 2015, I believe, yep.
Coming up on 6 years.
Pretty wild.
Long time.
Yeah, and we, Sean and I kind of both, we skipped last week, if you might have noticed, because we're just kind of feeling, we talked about it, and we're just feeling kind of, I don't know, burnt out. Is that the right word? I don't know, just kind of losing momentum on things we thought were interesting to talk about on the show, time investment, just general interest. You know, what we found is that, you know, the best part about the show really has been growing the community and meeting awesome people. And I don't know, just doing the show and editing the show every week felt like a lot of work for, I don't know, maybe not the, it was the too high level involvement for what we were sort of looking to get out of this sort of relationship we have with people who like the show. And so that's kind of where we're at. You know, this is going to be the last sort of formal episode of the podcast, but as Sean alluded to, we are going to keep the DNC thing going for the foreseeable future, just not necessarily in the podcast form, right?
Right, yeah. First of all, shout out to Chris. Thanks for that raid. Appreciate it, man. So Chris, CM Griffing, is someone that I hang out with on Twitch. So I just wanted to give him a shout out as well. He's been a supporter for a while, and anytime I kind of hop into his stream, he shouts the podcast out. So appreciate it. Yeah, and like Rockwell said, it's sort of been one of those things like, yeah, six years is a long time, and it kind of feels like the last year or so we've been kind of like running in circles a little bit. So I think I would like to, you know, do some streaming in the future and on building stuff. But I think I want to transition into a period of building for a while instead of yak shaving for a while about the same stuff. So that's kind of what a lot of the motivation was around it. Or the conversation, rather, like approaching Rockwell and asking, like, "Hey, what do you think about this?" So,
well, I'm proud of you guys. Like, Sean, almost 6 years of a weekly podcast is incredible. Like, what an effort on your part. And Rockwell, you beat me.
That wasn't the intention.
by a good margin too. But you did it. You did it, though. It's impressive.
I'm just really happy that you guys set up this awesome. You know, got the ground. You really made it really easy for me to transition into this because you did all the hard work of, you know, getting the thing going and doing all the 100 and I don't know, about 150 episodes before me. And I was secretly hoping that Sean would ask me when you left, Paul. I didn't like say anything, but he definitely did reach out to me first. And I was super excited to join, and it's just been really, really fun. So yeah.
That's cool, man. Couldn't have asked for anybody better to step in and kind of take the reins on this.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I didn't reach out to anybody else either. So you're correct on that. Yeah, honestly, like the show over the arc, like I've made a lot of friends, like people I would consider good friends. And more than just like doing the podcast, the most important thing to me was the community around it. So, you know, the Discord and people on Twitter and things like that. So I'm glad that we're able to, you know, continue on having a Discord, continue on having people around chatting and sharing and all learning together. So I think that's what makes it a lot easier for me to even, it did make it easier for me to start thinking about the idea of moving on from like a scheduled recording weekly. Yeah, but it's wild to think about, like Greg just popped into the chat. Like Greg was saying that we probably wouldn't even know each other if it weren't for the podcast, because I think I mentioned Insomnia on a show and one of the listeners tweeted at Greg, and that's how we met, was Twitter. So, yeah. And Greg is somebody that's had a huge influence on me in the last couple of years or last few years. So, yeah, there's been a lot of really good positive like changes in my life from the podcast too. And honestly, like Paul, you know, it was Paul, like, you know, moving on from a job and being like, hey, do you want to try this? You know, that was the reason in the first place. And I was like, sure, yeah, why not? You know? So, I also wanted to just to like formally say thanks to everybody for sticking around for all these years and coming back week after week and like sharing it with people and, joining the community and just conversing. So, it's made like the various transitions through my life, like moving to different states and, different jobs and all that stuff, like DNC and the people that I've met through DNC have sort of been a constant through all of that for me. So, that's been huge.
Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of amazed with everyone's ability to keep up with the weekly schedule. Like we're all so doing stuff all the time and how we're able to make time to do this. And then especially when we started streaming, like having a schedule, because before we recorded the show before we had the stream, right? I mean, for most of the history of the show, it was just recorded two people on a, you know, Discord or, you know, I don't know what you guys use, Skype or...
We used a variety of things. I think we used Skype at first and then maybe Discord for a while and some other stuff. There was never anything great, to be honest.
But like doing that, just two people on a phone call is such a different vibe from doing a quote unquote live show, right? And being able to stick to that schedule and produce something every week has just been, like you said, it's been a constant. And it is kind of always comforting that that was there. But happy to, you know, give ourselves some time back, as they say in the meeting parlance.
Oh, like on that note of like, what did we use? I'm just remembering nothing particularly worked well. So we were constantly like getting pissed off at stuff not working. And Skype was the best, even though the audio quality wasn't great. So we just kind of dealt with it because it was at least not flaky in terms of connection. So that was like a constant, well, is it going to work this week? Kind of conversation that we would have. So yeah, StreamYard is pretty okay. Like it has been one of the better setups we've had in a while. So
I think like audio, video, chat kind of stuff in general over the last 6 years has just really, really improved. I mean, you look at where Discord is now and you have dozens of people in a chat room, no problem. It's a free service. It's pretty astounding compared to thinking back on what Skype was like back in its prime.
Well, sure. It's all built on Elixir. That's why.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, Anthony in the chat posted earlier the description from the first episode. Listen to us talk about JavaScript frameworks such as Vue and React, web components, and experimental site navigation called Zoomable UI. I don't remember what Zoomable UI is. Yes, I do. It was like you could click a thing and it would like zoom you into a UI, right? So you navigate like like top down,
like a three-dimensional kind of interface situation. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. I vaguely remember that, but seems like a weird thing to have in the first description.
Is this like a page navigation thing? Like you're pushing and popping your history and it's zooming in and out. Is that what's going on here? Wow.
Also, Anthony just popped a link in the chat from the first episode show notes. The title is JSX looks like an abomination, which is really funny thinking about this, the arc you know, I think Vue was like 0.2 something or 0.1 something back then when we were using it.
0.12, I think, was when I first used it.
Right. 11, right. 12. And so now I'm like writing full time, like React full time. That's like the only thing I do at work. So it's funny how life comes at you, right?
But you got me into Vue.js. So I was in the midst, when I met you, I was in the midst of the remote ham radio console being a 7,000 line spaghetti code of jQuery, updating DOM elements, right? And I started trying to do it in React, and I just kept, like, you know, beating my head against the wall. And then I was like, hey, you just, like, kept talking about this Vue.js thing, and that just totally changed my world. So that's been good. Thumbs up. Two thumbs up for that.
Same. I mean, we were talking about Vue in that first episode because we had basically both just come across it. And then both of us ended up using it professionally, full-time professionally, for years. I used it all the time until a couple of years ago when I came over to MetaLab. And now I'm writing stuff in React, and I still think JSX looks like a bit of an abomination. But I gotta say, at the same time, I'm also doing new side projects and stuff in React just because of the ecosystem. Like, it's kind of at the point where, well, it's one.
Yeah, I think I stopped using Vue just before 3 came out, and it wasn't like a conscious choice to not use it. It was a transferring to a different job that uses React instead. So I haven't looked at it in a while now. Same for the reason that Paul mentioned too. It's just like, I know it. I'm pretty familiar, fluent with React now, so it would just keep it going.
Wait, so Paul, where were you when the show started?
So in late 2015, Sean and I both worked at Octopus Creative in Santa Cruz. And that was a consulting agency. So, you know, it's client work like we do now at MetaLab, on a very different scale, but still the same basic thing. And then very shortly after that, like, I think within a month or two, November, December 2015, I moved to San Francisco to take a job with Imagix. And that was kind of like, it was just a nice thing to be able to continue the podcast, keep talking to Sean, kind of have that connection back to the team there.
I don't think I knew you worked at Imagix.
Yep. I was only there for about a year. And then I got a chance to start my own company. So I went and did that. But no, it's a fantastic service. And I loved that job, actually.
Cool.
Very, very cool tech. I mean, they just have a bunch of Mac Pros sitting in racks in a data center. Who does that?
Wait, really?
It's amazing.
Yeah. They have a blog post about it. You can go and look.
Yeah, they had custom rack mounts designed for the trash can Mac Pros. And that's how they resize your images. It's not on AWS or anything like that. They have bare metal Macs in a data center.
So I know I've seen pictures of stacked trash can Mac Pros, like they're on their side, right? And they're stacked in like what look like milk crates, basically, black plastic. What I don't understand is, why didn't they make them hexagon shaped? Because then you could stack them even more efficiently.
Maybe you should be working for Imagix.
Maybe. Hire me. Send you my resume. I'll put up my resume in the show notes.
I just popped a link to that article in the show notes as well.
Real hot take on the trash can Mac Pro. Real relevant.
I wonder what their infrastructure looks like these days. I don't know.
Greg says, I remember hearing CodePen use Macs for the screenshots because of the better font rendering.
It's true. Well, the font rendering is better. It's true. That's pretty wild. Yeah, I think you went to Imagix and I ended up going to DK. And then you did the other thing. I don't know if you've ever talked about the thing that you, the other company you did.
Oh, yeah. I started a company called Nest Notes. It's not a thing anymore. It didn't work out, but gave it a shot. Learned a lot from it. And then I ended up at Design Collective with you. And then I left Design Collective and went to MetaLab. And then you ended up coming over to MetaLab. We're just following each other around back and forth.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking to kind of change up from DK and that whole grind. And then you just happened to, hey, they announced a role at the town hall today. You should check into it. And I was like, okay. So the timing was pretty okay there. Worked out pretty well.
So Sean, you alluded to earlier on the arc of the show. And I think we've had a lot of sort of common themes throughout the show, sort of things we've focused on no matter what, like, sort of technology we're using. And I don't know if you had any thoughts about I don't know. What are some sort of high level, what are some common threads throughout this whole thing that we sort of focused in on and chosen, you know, mantras or I don't know, ideals?
Yeah. So actually, like, kind of announcing in the Discord that it was going to be the last show, it was really cool. Like, people from the community were sharing kind of snippets and things like that. And so one of them that seems common is it's like the idea that it's probably okay. So I'm looking for a specific one here.
It's probably okay.
It's probably fine. Let me find it here really quick. It's really wild to me that people are kind of like saying, when I run into this situation at work or whatever, like, to hear one of our voices in their head, like something that we would say all the time. That blows my mind. So Ryan McDonough is saying that, like, both Sean and Rockwell's "Hey, this works for me" approach has helped me keep from being dogmatic on one approach or another. And then Sean's "It's fine" has been a small voice in the back of my head whenever I get down on something. So,
well, it's funny because we say "it's fine" and sometimes it's sarcastic. Like "this is fine," like the dog in the room with the, you know, the buildings on fire gif, right? But sometimes it really is fine. Sometimes that's what you need, is that it compromise.
Yeah. I think, like, for me, theming, right? Like, I think for me, imposter syndrome has been something that I've struggled with and still struggle with the entire time, you know? And so for me, that theme is just keep not like fighting through it. Like, you don't want to like struggle through life, right? But just like keep working, not necessarily grinding, but just keep working. Like, consistency maybe is the most important piece there. And the cool thing is that, you know, I've mentioned, like, people DM me on Twitter with all sorts of responses to things about the show. And I think one of the most common themes that I've talked to people about randomly is the imposter syndrome stuff. Like, being so open about it, like, not that other people aren't open about it, but just being willing to say it and be okay with that, I think other people have sort of identified with. And so, yeah, that's something that I think that's been constant for me. I'm finally now in a place in my career where, like, I've found ways to fight that or, like, techniques to use to kind of, like, get over that feeling. But that's been definitely, like, a thing that's been constant over the last 6 years.
Paul, do you have any thoughts?
I think we might have talked about this a little bit the last time I was on, but one thing that I always tried to promote when I was on the show, and something I think is a very important and cool part of the community in the Discord and stuff now, is just not being too dogmatic about things. And this goes back to "it's fine," but I think it's an extension of that. Like, it's fine right now. That doesn't mean that this is always going to be, it doesn't mean that I'm going to use Vue for the rest of my life. It doesn't mean that I'm going to use React for the rest of my life or my career or whatever. It means that for this particular project, this thing that I'm trying to achieve right now, I have a goal. My goal isn't to use React. My goal isn't to use Vue. My goal is to make a web app, right? And this particular technology happens to work because of all the other things that surround making a web app in this particular case. And it's so easy to lose sight of that and become like a sports team person. And I think that you guys have always done a good job of not being sports team people and kind of not fostering that attitude in the community, which I think is super important.
I mean, if I was, I would still be talking about Cult Fusion. Well, I kind of still am, I guess, but.
Or I guess, like, I was pretty sports teamy on Vue early on the show, for sure.
It was really good though.
It was super good.
Yeah, that was objectively the correct opinion.
Oh, let me tell you, I've had interactions with people IRL where that was not the case. I remember I was at Octopus and we were basically like a team augment at that point, right? And I remember some of their engineers came down. Greg is calling me out, JetBrains. That's true. I'm team JetBrains for sure. that's your fault though, Greg. But their team came down. And I remember this very specifically. We were all kind of chatting after a meeting, and one of the devs there was like, "So, how much do you love React?" And I said something to the effect of, like, I don't, though. And this person was visibly taken aback to my answer. It was real awkward after that. Yeah, I guess that would be it, too, like, not being dogmatic about stuff.
Yeah, and I know I talk a lot about or joke a little about getting things done in their kind of 8 or 10 different things that they say. And I think a lot of that sort of falls in the into the same vein of, you know, do what you have to. Not everything has to be finished. You know, posting on the internet, sharing your ideas, that kind of counts as a ghost of done, right? I think that's been important in driving forward in just doing things. You know, sometimes you just got to write code. It doesn't have to be good code. No one has to ever see it. Yeah, it'd be nice if like eventually it turned into something, or like it taught you a new thing that you could leverage for something that's going to make you money someday. But putting that pressure on yourself and trying to fight against the need to hustle, quote unquote hustle all the time, that is always like a push and a pull, I feel like, in our profession. You know, I didn't go to school for computer programming. Like, yeah, I'm an engineer, but like everything I learned was from doing side projects and summer jobs and, you know, learning on the job and just figuring it out. Like, I don't have any, I don't think any of us have professional training in being programmers, right? Like professional education.
I took a couple of CCNA classes. That's about it.
Right. So the fact that you're sort of always doing this stuff in your quote unquote free time, you get this association between, oh, I have to be, you know, doing something productive in my free time, and combating that, balancing your time, deciding what's important, how you spend your time. I think it's just the thing that we've just been struggling with the whole show. We talk about a lot. I think I'll continue to struggle with it. And but I can't help it. I get excited about things, man. I just want to build things. Leave me alone.
I still, like, after all these years, I started making my first website in 1999. So it's been over 20 years I've been doing this stuff, and I still just love hopping into a empty project and making an index.html and some JavaScript, or even just like a bash script or something. Like, it's fun to just noodle around with computers. Like, I don't think you can see this on the stream, it's behind the logo, but I've got like a TV back here that shows a live satellite image. It delayed by 5 minutes. NOAA publishes these gorgeous satellite images of the world. And I just have like, yeah. So I've got like basically a clock back here behind me of where I live. And that was just a fun random thing I did. And I think that's so important to like keep that joy of just making a random cool thing for yourself because you can, and it's fun.
Wait, this is a little Raspberry Pi thing?
Yeah. There's a Pi underneath the TV.
Yeah, it's awesome. So a little standalone. There's a guy that sells these actually. So you save some money too.
Oh, that's super cool. I didn't even know that.
Called a Geochron. They used to be these mechanical things where it would show you, it was a mechanical, like, gray line, fully, like, gears and levers and motors, and it was a map of the world that would show you where the sun was, and it would change throughout the year as the shadows of the sun changes. And, of course, now you can still get those, but they're insanely expensive, and the guy who made them died, so now his son makes them, but he's like, I have no idea how they work, but I just make them because I have the plans. Or you can buy the Raspberry Pi version that does the same thing for $200. But, yeah. love tinkering. Stuff like that.
I'm starting to get more into that realm, because that's not... I guess, like, way back in the day, I did tinker. And that's how I got into computers. But for me, I got into dev because I needed money. And so I started grinding because I needed money for food and stuff. So I think, like, through the arc of the show too, I've slowly been transitioning. And I think, like, after meeting Greg and kind of like getting his input on, you know, building stuff, and he's always building stuff for like learning and fun, and it doesn't have to be a business that you're shipping. That's like a really hard feeling for me to pry from my head for, you know, dumb reasons. I think we talked about this, relatively recently, but like the idea that in music, if you're trying to make a living, like there's always someone better than you, and that insecurity was in my head. So I was always having to grind, and that ruined it, you know? And so I feel like I've slowly been shifting from that mentality to being able to like, no, this is fine. I can just have fun with this, and that's okay. I always feel like, besides, outside of gaming, any hobby I've had has always sort of kind of like fallen away because I was like, well, I'm not grinding here. So what's the point of this hobby? So I feel like I'm close to getting out of that, which is good. It only took 6 years, but, it's good. I feel like I'm going in the right direction there.
Paul, I also wanted to call you out for something you said when I was listening to the show when you were on. And I don't remember a ton of what you guys talked about, but I always loved your perspective on things, just high level, like life perspective on things. What you said was something like about, it's talking about making decisions. I think like life decisions, like exercising or food or whatever. And you said something like, if this, you know, I make my decisions based off of like, is this going to make me a better person? Or something like that. You know, like does this decision, small decision that I'm making, push me in the direction of, you know, improving myself? I always just kind of like that. Such a simple concept of, it can be so applicable to anything. And I don't know, that always just really stuck with me. And I try to think about that when I'm, you know, deciding whether to eat the fourth Oreo or not.
That is something I think about all the time. Like, it's so easy to say, I want to be this type of person, whether that is exercise or food or being a better developer or whatever, and then like not actually do the action to make that thing a reality. And if you're not doing the action, then you're not that person. You can think about it all you want and it doesn't change the thing. The only thing that changes it is actually putting in the work. That's hard. Like, that's a very easy thing to say and a very hard thing to do. But it does help me in some way to think about things in terms of actions are all that really make any difference.
Yeah, and not everything has to be a big decision, right? It's the cumulative effect of all the sort of small decisions that push everything in the right direction.
Yeah, totally. If you do sit down for that, even 5-10 minutes a day, and read something about programming or write a couple lines of code, like, it really does snowball. And that's always the hardest thing, is just the sitting down part. Like, earlier this year I made a video game and released it, and the hardest part was always sitting down. But once I sat down, I would say, okay, I'll work for 15 minutes and then at least I put some time in today. And then I would, you know, I'd work on it for 3 hours, because that's how it always is. We love to, it's inertia, I guess. Inertia is a property of matter and also just how our brains work.
Yep. Hardest part of working out is getting to the gym. We're picking up the kettlebell or whatever, you know. Once you get there, working out's easy, but
it feels great.
Yeah. You feel so, you feel great afterwards. You have more energy. You're able to focus more. It turns out we're supposed to do that, right? We're not supposed to be sedentary all the time.
Yeah.
That's true. I think like the putting in the time, because it's not fast. I think that's something that I kind of always struggled with throughout the show as well, is wanting to be an expert right now, or wanting to have memorized a framework's API right now. And especially over the last, I've been at MetaLab for almost a year, actually. At the end of August will be my 1 year anniversary with MetaLab. But I think the year and a half before MetaLab, it was like Elixir, then Laravel, then Go, and then React and TypeScript. So there was like quite a while where I was like, do I even know what the heck I'm doing anymore? Because nothing felt easy. Like, it used to feel easy, right? But that's because I've been writing Elixir for 3 years. And I went from everything was easy and familiar to nothing was easy or familiar at all. And I sort of like threw a fit a few times. And it's good to like having that experience coming out on the other side and being able to look at it and think like, oh, of course, now it makes sense. You know, like, I know why I was feeling that way. Right. But yeah, kind of like going through that and being impatient, I think, had been a big learning experience for me. And so I've tried to implement things that actively, help me deal with those situations. Like, I started going through Execute program a while back, and they use a system called spaced repetition. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But Execute program like really stuck, and I was able to remember stuff. And so then I looked for apps that implement spaced repetition, but allowed me to create my own content. And so now, I don't think I've talked about this yet, but I have hundreds of note cards that I use. I use an app to go through them. And while I'm sitting waiting for coffee to be done every morning, I'll just flip through these note cards. And I'm able to, I feel like I've accelerated my learning and my retention really quickly. And had I just had that discipline earlier on, you know, who knows what I'd be building with right now. So
So these note cards are just like you read something or you learn something and like a fact, and then you write it down on a card, and then that card is just presented to you on some interval.
Yeah. So whenever I get stuck on something, or whenever I'm looking at a piece of code and I don't know something about it, I will try to figure out what the thing is I don't know, and I'll document it in a card. And the spaced repetition portion is the interval in which you're asked about it. So if I'm going through the cards that, like, this app that I use called Mochi, mochi.cards is the URL, but there's lots of them, like Anki, A-N-K-I is another one. So it asked me, I'll look at the card. If I don't know the answer, I say, I don't know it. And then it'll put it, I look at the answer, and then it puts it back in the stack for me to review that day. If I know it, it'll schedule it for review in 2 days. And in 2 days, if I know it again, it'll schedule it for review in 4 days, and 8 days, and 16 days, and so on. There's like some algorithm, I don't know, it talks about it, that it uses. But essentially, as you learn the material, the time between reviews just gets extended longer and longer. So that's how Xcute program works. Like if you're learning about JavaScript concurrency or TypeScript, or they have a SQL course as well I'm going through, you learn the material, you answer some quizzes, and then each morning there's new quizzes, and then you might be learning something or being quizzed on something that you learned 6 months ago, but it like triggers that memory in the brain. And that system works really well for me, turns out. So that's become a habit of seeing something I don't know, putting it into the stack of cards, and just going through whatever it tells me to go through that day.
I'm curious, like, what's the average length of a card? Is this a sentence and a link? Is this a paragraph? Like, what does a card look like?
Yeah, it differs depending on what it is. So right now I'm working through, I think it's called refactoring.guru is the site, but they have basically your classical Uncle Bob-isms or whatever, right? Like here are the different names for different refactoring methodologies, or here are different design patterns or whatever. So those ones are typically like, what is this design pattern? And there'll be, on the inside of it, it'll give a synopsis of the pattern, and it'll give a couple examples, in my case, TypeScript, that I've copied from across the web. And so as I'm going through a card, I'll kind of like try to describe it to myself. So it's not really precise, like question, answer. It's more so, did I generally get the answer right? And the reason is the reason I'm not being super precise on this is that because I have a link on every card that goes to where I found the information, so I can just go back to it. So as long as I'm able to recall generally what it was, I can get back to where I need to be in recalling that information. So for example, code reviews, I've been internalizing these different shapes, right? So a lot of programming is recognizing shapes or patterns that already exist, or recognizing when to apply a shape or a pattern. And so I'm memorizing different shapes and patterns. And so code review has gotten a lot easier because there's more prior artwork in my brain for me to think about, does this match? No. Does this match? No. This one matches. Does it make sense here? No. This one matches. Does it make sense? Yes. Yeah, so let's prescribe that. So I've gone from feeling like not knowing how to go to the next level as a programmer, I guess, in like knowing how to solve a problem that I'm presented with or someone else's problem, to feeling more confident in like, oh, I've seen this before, even if I didn't, you know, write that code, or even if I haven't like shipped a Java app or something like that. That's a bad example, shipping a Java app, but that's been really, really helpful for me lately.
I mean, honestly, I don't think that's a bad example at all. I think that's a fantastic example, because one of the most common questions I hear and see this all the time is people saying like, what is the first programming language I should learn? And it's just, and I think what you just said there about like, I don't need to have shipped a Java app to understand like why a piece of code makes sense or doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what the first programming language you learn is. It matters if it is relevant to the first project you're working on. That's really the only reason it matters at all. The second language is going to be way easier to learn than the first. The third is going to be easier. Fourth, et cetera, et cetera. You need to, I feel personally that that's just a thing you need to accept if you want to do programming professionally. It's just, you need to learn these lower patterns and all the stuff that is shared between all of these languages, which is a huge percentage of the stuff that you're doing day to day. Like if you know how to do array manipulation stuff in JavaScript and you know the terminology for that, you can probably Google it for almost any other language. And if a language does something in a way that is unusual, like Elixir, something more functional, for example, they're going to make a big deal about that thing that they do differently and explain it over and over and over, because it is weird and different and most languages are almost identical when it really comes down to it.
Yeah. I think that idea of like a large part of programming is learning these base patterns that are applied across the board is something that I skipped in trying to just grind, because the patterns I learned were, here's how you make a WordPress theme, you know, not necessarily other things that are lower. The patterns I learned were, here's how you can use multiple jQuery plugins together, and not how do you write a jQuery plugin, or, you know, how do you implement this from scratch or something like that. So there's a place for both, of course, but yeah, finding a system that allows me to actually internalize this information, because I've tried to learn this stuff before, it just never stuck because I wasn't getting the reps in. Of course, I'm not going to remember it. Of course, you're not going to pick up a textbook about design patterns that has 24 of them in it, and you're not going to be able to walk away and apply them to your everyday work. But with this system, this spaced repetition, or you know, no cards or whatever. I mean, it's not new to programming at all. It's like, I'll link to this in the show notes as well, but there was an article called The Janky Method, where this person was basically like, listen, I tried to learn a program. I was not good at it. I found out about spaced repetition, and I found out about how it's used in medical schools and law schools, and I applied it to programming, and suddenly I'm like making money as a programmer. I was like, oh, that's convincing. What were you going to say, Rockwell?
I just want to interject that they actually use the same similar process for learning Morse code. There's this system called the Cook or Coke method of learning Morse code. And this is learning to receive Morse code, right? So be able to listen to dots and dashes and be able to decode it in your head, you know, without writing it down. And they start off with two letters, like an A and an E, for example, and they'll just play it over and over and over again randomly. And once you get 90% pass rate, then they add a third letter. And then you have to be able to decode those three letters, and then the fourth letter, and so on until you're, you know, doing 90% on the entire alphabet, right? And if you fail, slow down, you're going to get that over and over again. You build up that knowledge of, you know, if you screw something up, you're going to hear it more often in the future, right? That's all built into it. So same thing.
Yeah, same thing. And we use the same thing, a similar approach. I didn't know what it was called then, but to get Jamie through the bar. So in SetApp, there's an app called Studies. And so we converted it was over 1,000 of these Burberry. Burberry's like a course you can buy for the bar. We converted a ton of these things into digital. And so she would just sit with the Studies app and have Netflix on in the background, just go through cards. And she passed the bar after doing this for, it must have been a year. That's a tough test, okay? But yeah, so I was like, oh, maybe something. So I looked at Studies and I found that they do something similar, and then Execute Program, it gave me a term, like it put a term on it, made it easy for me to research. So yeah.
I really like that it gave me a term. It put a term to it. And that's kind of along the same lines of what I was saying earlier. Like you just need to understand this little kernel of how to search for a thing, because we all have access to this worldwide encyclopedia, this incredible thing that didn't even exist when we were kids. And now is the thing that everybody has access to. And you just need to know the right word to type into it. And you put the right word in the magic box and you can learn almost anything.
That's right.
Unless the word is .NET, then good luck.
Yeah. Like I'm not trying to memorize, I'll pop the link in there. It was refactoring.guru. I'm not trying to memorize every detail about every design pattern that's ever existed. I just need to be able to have enough familiarity with the idea that I can find it later if I need to dig back into it. So that's my goal.
If the world changes so much that you're not able to do that anymore, you're going to have bigger problems. So it's totally okay to learn to just like learn how to Google, at least for a lot of stuff.
And part of the janky method that I link to is talking, it's basically rules on what you should or shouldn't make into note cards, or what you should or shouldn't try to remember. So the author is like, maybe you shouldn't make 1,000 note cards about React's API, because React could be replaced, could changes often. Yes, focus on the things that are true across the board and then go from there. So yeah, I think stumbling across this, like shout out to Nabil, like for instance, Nabil, because he's been telling me about this forever and I just didn't listen to him, or like, it's like, yeah. So he's been talking about this for a while. But I think like this has been one of the most important things for me as a person to discover one of these processes, like, oh, this does work for me, and I can apply it to more things than just programming. Apply it to, I mean, I guess it's similar to how I learned music theory too, was sitting in a cubicle in a job I hated. I happened to have a cubicle mate that also played guitar, and so we would just write scales over and over again. And so he would ask me about a scale, and I would ask him about a scale, and we'd go back and we'd draw it, and if we got it wrong, we'd, like, you know, cross-reference with each other. And then we had a mirror positioned on the on his side of the wall so we could see the direction our boss would be coming from. Again, I was a terrible employee, but I hated that job. And anyway, you know, just repetition, just writing the scale and over again. So it works.
I just want to generalize a little bit. One of the things that I've learned from you over the years is the importance of just writing things down in general, whether it's on a note card or Notion or on a tablet or like a yellow piece of paper. Don't look at that. That's privileged information. Like, just the importance of writing things down. I mean, how many times I'm starting to find stuff that I forgot I wrote down, right? But that's the beauty of it, because I don't have to remember it again. Even if you never look at it again, just trying to take your own thoughts and put them in words. It's not something you're used to doing. You know, when you're writing code, we want to dry things up, right? We want to write the minimal amount of code possible to get the thing done. But having written prose that sort of expands on that and captures the ideas in a readable way that you can recapture later without having to, you know, decode it, it's just been extremely invaluable for me for growing professionally and just personally, you know, just keeping track of my hobbies, keeping track of just anything in my life that I would now I'm much more likely to just sit down and write the thing so I don't forget it and I can get it out of my brain. And I think that's been a huge takeaway for me from learning that from you and seeing you use your 15 different note-taking programs.
just one.
Which one now? What are you on now?
What are you using now? Yeah.
Mainly just Notion.
What about Obsidian?
I still have it around. I don't know. It's fine.
It's fine.
I'm doing more of the note cards than notes. So the nice thing about Mochi in particular is that it's not just note cards front back. It's you can create documents and split it up into cards. So you can write like a full length document in it, and you just put three dashes for a line break, and that turns it into different faces. So you can actually have a multi step card if you wanted. So
some kind of Mobius card with like infinite number of sides.
Yeah, exactly. And so like if you're doing a design pad or if you're doing a refactoring pattern, you can say, what is the gist of this thing? Okay, what are some reasons why this happens? Okay, next, what are some ways you could resolve this? Okay, next, how would you know, so you can make it a multi-step process. But I started kind of, and you can tag things too. So it almost is basically Obsidian, but you can chop stuff into flashcards and it has like a space repetition thing built into it. So
cool. I'm really happy to hear that's working for you.
I don't even really know what Obsidian is, but I've been using Bear very happily for about 5 years.
Kind of the same thing, I think.
Yep.
They actually have, I think there's a couple of people in the Discord who use Bear as well. And they've got a super cool new beta out with all sorts of new markdown features and cross referencing. And it's a lovely thing.
Yeah, it looks nice. I think I still have a year sub that I got a while back because it was like $15 or something like that. I don't recall what it was.
Yeah, it's not unreasonable. I think it's like $15 or $20 a year. Panda is the alpha that they have. Animated GIFs, tables, etc.
Animated GIFs, killer feature.
I'm not complaining. Resize and crop images, sketching directly into notes.
Mm. Oof.
So I know we're running up on an hour, but I did have one question, like the only question I thought that I would ask before starting the show. And maybe at some point we can do a follow-up, I don't know, probably just on a stream, but my main question was going to be like, where do you see yourself going from here? So like over the arc of the show, like you, Paul, have like transitioned from companies to doing your own company back to another company, and you're kind of like always consistently building something on the side. And you, Rockwell, have like you've kind of like always said RHR, but you're also you've been like branching out and doing other contracting gigs and things like that. So my main question was going to be like, where do you see yourselves going from here? Or like maybe what's one main, like one big aspiration that you have for the future?
I guess I'll start. I haven't given this a lot of thought, so this is kind of on the spot. But I think my general trend is going to be towards compartmentalizing and reducing scope of my relationship with programming. Honestly, you know, stopping this show, doing the show is one small step towards that direction. You know, I am extremely privileged to be able to do this as my profession. It's, I just feel very lucky to be able to do this, work remotely, be able to live off it, enjoy doing it. I just think that's great. And, but more and more, or less and less, I want to make that my hobby, you know, and I'm trying to draw better boundaries between my work life and it be just being programming and, finding other things to do with my time. And so I think, we'll see how successful it is, because I do enjoy it. You know, like nothing's going to stop me from just, like Paul said, just opening a new project and just hacking around on something if I'm interested. But I don't want to force myself to have to do that or write or talk necessarily about it, like if I don't feel like it. So I'm happy to do it. I'm happy to get the paycheck for it. Wherever that takes me, you know, this Dockyard contract is up in a couple months. Who knows what's going to happen after that? I have, you know, maybe there's other opportunities for that for me, but also I've been doing this full-time contract gig, and guess what? The backlog on Remote Ham Radio just keeps growing. So, I'm looking forward to having more time to spend on that and do the same thing, sort of collapse down our feature set, make the thing more self-sustainable, reduce our scope and, you know, interface between our app and the outside world. And honestly, the people, you know, like if we can minimize support issues, that's the biggest win. That's the best use of my time. So I really enjoy doing the contract thing. I'd like to keep that up. I'd like to spend more time on HR and, I don't know, maybe spend some more time 3D printing some stupid stuff or being in the workshop. That's kind of where I'm at right now.
It's really nice to have a superpower, but sometimes you just want to be Clark Kent. Like, you don't want to program all the time for everything for the rest of your life, right? I think that totally makes sense to me.
Yeah.
For me, man, I don't know. I just want to keep making cool stuff. Mostly, I've had this idea for over a decade before we met, Sean. I've known you for like 10 years now. I've had this idea for over a decade of some kind of digital scrapbook thing. That was basically what Nest Notes was. I tried this. I've been trying over and over to do this thing. I really want to make that happen in some form. But you know, other than that, just keep on hacking, keep making stuff with the 3D printer and embedded electronics. Like that was something when I was a kid that it cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to have like actual PCBs made. And now I can sketch something up and have it made in China and shipped over here in a matter of weeks for a few dollars. Like it's kind of, it's really several orders of magnitude different. And that is super intriguing to me. Like that seems like a totally new thing that just never existed before. And most people don't understand how to do. And I do.
Limitless potential there.
Yeah. Unlimited power. That is just wildly intriguing and almost infinite depth. And so definitely something I want to keep looking into.
Yeah. I was on there's a 3D printing subreddit and, it's pretty good actually. Like I see lots of cool stuff on there. And one of the guys was like posted a picture of a model rocket that he designed. Right. And I'm like, man, that's cool. Like, why aren't I designing model rockets? What am I doing? How come I'm not just designing and printing and testing my own model rockets and doing the telemetry with a little circuit board and maybe like a remote controlled release for the parachute and like trying different designs, you know, all this cool stuff. Like, yeah, I shot off a couple of Estes rockets as a kid with my dad, you know, little cardboard tubes, but like design my own? Why not?
And that's like, that's so emblematic of what a ridiculous shift has happened over the last couple of decades. They were cardboard tubes. And now you're talking about telemetry and opening your parachute. And so like I made a drip system, an automated drip system for when we travel. We have an indoor garden downstairs with like grow lights and all that. And if we travel, you know, for more than a week or so, we need some way to be able to water it. And I made an indoor drip system that hooks up to HomeKit. I did that in like 2 evenings. It wasn't even a whole lot of work. And that is just mind blowing. That is not something that would have been possible even for a highly skilled, much more skilled than I am, a highly skilled engineer, even just a handful of years ago. So like that is such an incredible and empowering area that I really want to spend a lot more time with personally. What about you, Sean? What's your plan for the next N years?
Well, I think like a theme here is sort of being curious, right? Like wanting to be interested in something or working on something because I'm interested in it. And I think for me, that is a big part of what I want to focus on is doing this on my terms and not feeling like, I guess for most of my career, and I'm trying to think now, like if I've known you for about 10 years, that means that I've probably been doing this for about 10 years then. Like freelancing a little bit before, but really like my first dev job was when you and James hired me at Octopus. So that would have been 10 years. But like for the most of my career, I didn't necessarily feel like I really had control over what I was doing. I don't know if that makes sense, but because of how I learned, via, you know, making themes or plugging WordPress plugins together, you know, configuring stuff essentially is it's configuration, not necessarily building. I never really felt like I had real control over my craft, if that makes sense. You know, I was always at the mercy of whoever else was making the tools. I was only skilled enough to plug them together and configure them to work together. Right. And I feel like more recently, and I know this isn't the case, right? Because I freaking like build apps in the past that are, you know, that are still running today.
There's that imposter syndrome again, right?
But I feel like now, though, I feel like now that I'm getting over that hump and I'm getting over that imposter syndrome and I'm getting over that feeling of I'm more so like a glorified configurator. And so I want to dig deeper into that. And I want to, I guess an extension of that is be curious enough to hack on things, like get interested in something and build something with tech around it. Right. So I'm trying to do that with Law and with Jamie, like helping her not be frustrated because she gets frustrated often, especially when working on policy things and she has to deal with the government. That's a nightmare. But yeah, I'm trying to, what I couldn't do with music or haven't been able to do yet is, stave off that feeling of excitement or that feeling of like, this is a job, this is a responsibility. And I'm feeling like I'm getting to the point now where I feel like I have control over what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing well enough that I can actually feel like I don't need to grind anymore, if that makes sense. I want to get to a point where I do what I want to do on my terms and make what I want to make on my terms, not because I have to, not because I have to be making because I need to be learning to keep my job, but I want to make because I want to, if that makes sense. And I feel like I've been getting there, but I would really like to dig into that more. And as far as like, you know, what that looks like, I don't know. I mean, the real only job experience I haven't had yet is working in a bigger company at scale, just slinging code all day and being reviewed by other people all day. Like I've had the small consulting gig. I'm at the big consulting gig now. I've had the small startup experience. I've never had the big startup. So I could, you know, maybe I could seek that out at some point. I don't know. I'm not saying I'm leaving MetaLab if anyone hears this, but you know, that's also a possibility. Like maybe I want to go find a job writing Go and maybe I hate it. I don't know. But I don't know that I would hate it because I've never done it, you know, so.
Watch out. Greg's still in the chat, I think.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Just like slinging code all day and not being like, because my current job right now, I'm like half and half sort of thing. So I don't know. But we'll see. We'll see what happens, I guess.
Cool. Well, now what, Sean?
I think I've run out of things to say.
Only took 6 years.
Yeah. I wonder how many hours that is.
Someone do the math. Chat, do the math.
Well, early episodes were like half an hour, right? They were shorter.
Some of them were pretty short, yeah. I do think that any of us could get a pretty realistic AI voice of ourselves, like, very easily. And high fidelity, it's a lot of content.
It's a lot of content.
Get the old Roger Ebert.
But then it's just going to be a Markov chain of just, like, JavaScript nonsense library names.
285 hours at least, at the minimum. Well, yeah, that's kind of weird to think about. I'm just waiting for the day where that shows up. You once said this thing, like in a job interview or something. We have you on record as saying, having said some weird thing. I don't know.
Oh, God. In theory, it's all going to be indexed at some point, right?
Probably, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
That's terrifying. Delete it all, boys.
Burn it down. Yeah.
Pull the thermite over the hard drive.
Then there are the after shows. Oh, right. I didn't even think about that. The additional hour on YouTube as well.
Shoot.
Yeah.
It's all there. Don't go mining, people.
But yeah, speaking of the after show, I guess we can, I can wrap things up. But I wanted to, follow up with just like thanking everybody for showing up week after week. And it seems like week over week, we have people jump into the chat that have said something like, oh, I've been listening for a while. Or, like even Chris, I shouted out Chris earlier. He was saying that one of his longtime mods has been listening to the show for a while, which is wild. So it was really strange to me when I started getting more involved in Twitch and going to channels and people are like, oh, you're the DNC guy. I'm like, it's crazy. But yeah, so I'm looking forward to just, continuing to grow the Discord, continuing to just keep chatting with people, continuing to help, trying to help other people learn and grow. So that's been one of the most rewarding things to the show, I think, is getting, messages or emails or DMs from people that have said like, oh, I just got my first dev job and I was listening to your show and it encouraged me to go back to school or start learning how to program or whatever. I think that was like, Paul always says to me, like, I just want to help people. And that was one of the main reasons why we started the show. And to actually like have those DMs come in, like that's like reason, like purpose fulfilled, So ideally we just keep doing that without a scheduled Thursday call.
Yeah. And again, I want to reiterate, like, if you want to experience as what Thomas is calling the agglomerated brand experience. We can't reiterate enough. The Discord community is awesome. The last time. The link is in the show notes, we promise. Probably watch the Twitch for future cool streams, chill streams, coding streams, chatting streams, whatever that consists of. That's all we really have planned right now. I don't know. We're looking forward to that. And seeing you guys and girls, ladies, come by. Folks. Trying to normalize on folks instead of guys.
Yeah.
Folks, peeps.
Folks is pretty safe.
Human beings.
Well, you don't know. You don't know that.
That's true.
On the internet, nobody knows you're a dog.
That's right. Let's see here. Yeah, I guess the meta is kind of different, right? Like, I guess we do have show notes, so you can head on over to DNC That Show if you want to look at the notes. Or any... There's a lot of content there, mostly links to React and Vue. But yeah, DNC That Show is not going anywhere. That's going to continue to hang out, be around. So you could check that out. And like Rockwell was saying, there is a link to a Discord invite at DNC That Show. So if you can't find it elsewhere, you can head over to DNC That Show and then you can get to the Discord community.
Yeah. And I guess we got to thank Spec too, right? Like they're not a part of the show now, but they had us on the network for a good long time, and that relationship was really great. And having them be able to handle all the stuff for us and do the heavy lifting so we didn't have to, and be a part of the network, that was an awesome opportunity to be there with some of the other more prominent podcasts. So that was cool as well.
Yeah.
Huge thanks to Sarah and Bryn, Sarah in particular, who did a ton of work on the podcast over a long period of time. Really appreciate that. And John Cottrell, who had Sean and I on an episode of Developer Tea very early on, which was super cool of him.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. What a huge podcast that is.
Cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. It's so crazy to me that DNT has over 500,000 streams at this point.
That's a pretty good round number.
I do feel like there is one last thing I have to do, just to finally like really close the loop for anybody who's been listening for the whole series.
Oh no.
This is not quite a LaCroix, but I'm going to open it right next to the microphone.
I forgot about that.
That's how we used to start each episode.
Those octopus purchased LaCroix cans.
Nothing tastes better than free water.
Delivered to the office by the trunk full. Our office PA would go to Target and buy out the whole thing back in the day. Well, Paul Rockwell, it's been fun.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for letting us be a part of your show, Sean.
It's Sean's world. We're all just living in it.
That's right. That's right.
Cool. Well, see you all in the after show, and we'll see everybody else. If you are listening to this, head over to Discord. Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it. And if you do, we'll see you there.
Cool. Bye, Sean, and bye, everyone.
See you.